When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 195 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Another Sunday morning, another Everton win, rolling in a fantastic mood. Looks like we have to dust off our passports at this stage for Europe next season. But delighted to say we've been joined by cricketer, Somerset cricketer now, newly signed, Jake Ball. Jake, how are you? A lot's happened since we last spoke.
Yeah, a hell of a lot's happened, mate. Moved counties, Everton's form's turned around, which is the main thing. Had a daughter. Things have changed a lot for the better as well. So on all fronts. So I'm very happy man at the minute.
Yeah, I think last time you were on, I'm pretty sure it was post defeat, which wouldn't have been too difficult given what's happened in the last couple of years. But nice to have you on to discuss a win, of course. And like you said, you know, a big change in terms of the cricketing career with you'd be in. And I was going to say for so long, and now you are moving to the West Country for a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean it's an exciting move. I think at the age I am now, I think you start to look at your career and where you want to go in it. And to get a move at the age I am now is exciting. I still think I've got a lot to offer the game. Even though, you know, 33 at the start of next season, so. Yeah, I feel like I've still got a lot to offer the game and really looking forward to the challenge down there. I've got a lot of good young players. It's a young squad, but, you know, it's an exciting one. So hopefully have a couple of years down there and see what we can win down there.
Go in like Gareth Barry did at Everton all those years ago, mate.
Yeah, exactly. I'll still be playing when I'm 40.
On that note, though, I mean, I know you're good mates with Stewie Broad, aren't you? You know, just a quick word on his career. I mean, what a way to bow out as well. He's been a phenomenal cricketer, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been incredible on the field, incredible off the field. I owe quite a lot to him. You know, when I was about 17 or 18. I plucked up the courage to ask him to go for a coffee and talk about sport, talk about cricket and how he'd sort of got himself to where he was. And we ended up spending about an hour sat having talking about cricket and sort of how he'd got to where he was. And it was one of the best conversations that I'd had accelerating myself into that. Mrs. ringing me. Into that sort of mindset. You know, I think he was so good at the mindset side of things. I learned so much from him, and what he's gone on to do is absolutely incredible, and he deserves all the credit he gets.
Yeah, I couldn't have put it better myself. Can he beat you at golf yet, though?
No, he can't. He can't chip. You see, he went to go and see that chipping specialist I see on Instagram. That still didn't help. So, if you just get him around the greens or with a putter in his hand, he crumbles.
Brilliant, mate.
That'd be like you, Lee, as well.
Only
from what I've heard, just on the grapevine, that you sure game needs a little bit of work.
No, I'm the opposite, mate. I'm a bit erratic off the tee, and then just like a bit of a wizard around the greens. But a bit like Seve, really. You know what I mean? I've got decent hands. I'm just awful. I'm just like awful off the tee, just too inconsistent. But we still need to get a game, Jake. Hopefully, we'll find.
I move further away now though.
I know. Well, there's a couple of cracking courses down where you're going, mate. So we'll.
Yeah, to be fair, I'm looking forward to it. A few of the lads say the golf is very good down there, so I'm very excited to go down there.
Yeah, take the sticks, 100%.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lee, you put us through on the podcast expenses. Exactly. I'm sure you won't mind. I'm sure you won't mind doing that.
You can carry, you can carry for me.
Why not? Yeah. I'd like Nick Faldo's caddy. What was she called? Fanny. Fanny. What was her name? Remember it?
Yeah.
That was my youth watching golf. I remember it for years and years, caddying for Nick Faldo. That might be. I had one of those visors on. Giving you the yardage and all that. And I won't know all the terms, me, you know, when it comes to golf. Don't you worry about that. But anyway, back to things that I do know about, sort of, and that's football. And it's great to, you know, we've had a Everton now with 6 minutes from nine, which is, you know, after we always go back to these last couple of seasons, how hard they've been, and we're now starting to see Everton hit a little bit of form. You know, we're going away from home and winning games that maybe in the last couple of years we would have lost, or we certainly would have lost. You know, given what we've been through and what we've witnessed. You know, we've gone to Crystal Palace yesterday, and aside, you know, the home form wasn't great. A bit like us, really, in terms of they've been better away from home. But a Palace side who had the probably two best players returning in Eze and Elise, obviously off the bench. It's always loud down there. Obviously, it's the floodlights are on. It's a difficult place to go. I know we've got a good record. I think now, by the way, after yesterday, Palace have only won one out of the last 18 games against Everton, which I couldn't believe. I know we've had a few decent home performances against them, but away from home, quite often, it's a real tough game. But that I think the out of the last 10 games, I think five have been 0-0 against Palace away from home, which tells you all you need to know, which backs up your prediction piece from last weekend, wasn't it? Of the 0-0. But we've gone there. You know, we've taken the lead three times and come away with a 3-2 win. And Peter, you know, it's another game, isn't it, where we've seen probably another side to the Sean Dyche Everton. We've seen sort of digging in and just sitting there and giving a side 80% of the ball in Brighton. Last week, we've seen us semi-boss games and lose near the start of the season. Wolves, Fulham, those kind of games. Palace was a mixture, I think, of everything, wasn't it?
It was a crazy game, wasn't it? I mean, it shows how wrong I was with my 0-0 prediction. I think I had to check a couple of times. I was actually watching the season's game. It was so end-to-end, wasn't it, across the 90 minutes. The players must have been absolutely shattered. It was like two fighters just swinging at each other for the majority of the game. But no, like you say, I was quite surprised how much of the ball Crystal Palace had. I mean, they almost had 70% possession. Now, you might expect that if we're playing, you know, something like, you know, Brighton or Manchester City, Aston Villa, you know, teams that really like to get on the ball and control the game, you know, true possession-based teams. That's not Crystal Palace. So, like you say, you know, we've got a really clear kind of game plan and identity now. We've essentially become a counter-attacking team. And Dyche has probably settled on a kind of a firm first 11 now, which I think is a real strength for us. And, you know, it's going to help the players. But, you know, every week now, I think the fans kind of know what the starting team's going to be. And it's been a long time since we've had that kind of stability. But it was odd watching the game because I'm still used to the Everton where if you get the first goal, you can relax a little bit and you're expecting to get something from the game. If the other side score, whether it's an equaliser or whether they go ahead, you kind of feel the worry seep in, and you normally see it on the pitch as well. So, I not to get too carried away, I think it was an important game yesterday because, you know, when's the last time we've seen Everton do that? You know, to go ahead again and again, and to win a game like that 3-2 away, you know, away from home, I can't think of the last time that, you know, a team has played as well as Crystal Palace played, because you probably said that they were the better team in terms of the football they played, but it was the clinical Everton that we don't always see. You know, you go back to the start of the season, you look at the Fulham game, And you look at some of the games that, you know, we've come away from and said we should have won, but we didn't. Should we be worried? That for me, yesterday was the complete opposite of that. It was a game where Palace probably had the better chances. They had more of the ball, but we took the chances that we had and came away with the win.
Thank you, guys. I think the clinical element of the game was a really important aspect, because how many times did we say at the start of the season, we're creating chances, you know, we just need the players there to put the ball in the back of the net, and we weren't scoring goals. Whereas you look at it now, and you look at yesterday, and it's almost night and day in terms of, you know, Everton only had 8 shots, which, you know, given, you know, recent times, Everton have been creating a lot more than eight chances per game, and probably better quality of chances, you could argue. But you look at the goals that we scored, and, you know, they were all different in a way, weren't they? But they were chances in, you know, close to goal, weren't they? It wasn't a case of what we were shooting for 20, 25 yards. We created, you know, 3 decent chances. Okay, Decorey's was a tapping off a great attempt from Mikhailenko. But it was just nice to see us, like you say, be so clinical after what was an absolutely frantic start. You know, we've gone and scored inside the first minute. You know, Mikhailenko now has turned himself into prime Roberto Carlos in the last few weeks. And he's adding goals to his game. You know, we could have scored 2, you know, with that volley as well, which hit the post. But after sort of yet again facing adversity in terms of being pegged back twice, it was just great to see. But Jake, if we go back to the first minute, the first goal, and like I say, Everton started on the front foot, and it was very much a case of different to Brighton, where we were sitting in, and Everton thought, no, you know, different side, let's adapt, let's start the game in a different manner. And how good to see Mikhailenko now, you know, he's up there with the attack and play. He got his shot away first of all, which was blocked, didn't he? But then made sure he stayed in and around the box. Lovely little ball that was dinked up by Jack Harrison, and there's Mikhailenko. But he's in good form, isn't he? Defensively attacking. But that's what we need from our fullbacks, isn't it? Is them to sort of be involved in chipping in with goals as well.
Yeah, definitely. It was obviously, like I say, a great start. But it was for me, it was a massive goal in terms of when you look at the players we had in the box. I think when you say about the start of the season, when you look at times where we're creating chances, but we're getting crosses in, we'd have 1 or 2 players in the box. You know, the odds were against us. Whereas I remember watching yesterday, and the commentator said Everton had flooded the box with players. Now, I don't think we quite flooded. We had about 4 or 5 players in their box in the first minute. You know, it's I think it's a massive change from where we was at the start of the season. We're getting players in the box, like you say, getting Mikhailenko in there is massive. Obviously, when the crosses go in, you need the odds in your favour. The more players you have in the box, the more chance you've got to score, and it's simple. And I think in terms of Mikhailenko, I'm really pleased for him. I think he's always worked hard. He's always what looked like one of those players that wants to put in the work, wants to do well, wants to play well for the shirt. And to now finally see that come into fruition and him actually putting in some good performances. You know, he's putting in good crosses. I've seen him beat players, which, you know, I think in previous years sort of get the ball and sort of panic a bit and pass it straight away, whereas now he's looking to take players on. I think it's just general confidence in the team. I think the confidence came across from the first minute yesterday. Players, like getting players in the box, taking players on, players getting forward. And I think that starts from how solid we've actually been at the back. I think, you know, when you've got that confidence of, I think the 2 centre-halves have been outstanding for me. I think it's the first time in a long time we've had 2 centre-halves where you can go, you know what, you know, they're solid. If we lose the ball, we've got a good chance that they're going to stop them. I think the confidence just comes from them, and it's gone forward from there. And it was a really pleasing game to watch yesterday.
Mikhailenko one's difficult for me in the fact that, Mike, you've always rated him, rated him, haven't you? And for me, I've probably been in the camp where, like, I'm just not sure on this kid. And, you know, defensively, he's never been in question for me, because as a fullback, he's... you know, very rarely gets beat one-on-one. He's very diligent, reads it well, doesn't always go to ground easily. You know, he's had some cracking games against some top wingers in the Premier League as well. But then he never really offered us anything going the other way. You know, we've, like I've said previously on other podcasts, like, we've been spoilt in Digne and Baines because they're the opposite of that, aren't they? Both of them two are arguably some of the best left-backs, not just Everton have seen in the Premier League, but, well, certainly Baines, you know, one of the best in the Premier League, full stop. And but you've got to give massive credit to Dyche there for backing him, giving the lad confidence. You know, he's come out and said, didn't he, in the post-match, saying that he liked what he saw when he came in. The boy really, like you said, Jake, the boy really wants to learn. He was very, you know, very keen to sort of impress and everything else. And he has added that slowly. Look, let's be honest, he's never going to be prime Baines, and we have to accept that. But, you know, the fact the lad scored 2-2 now, and arguably really should have scored 3, really. I mean, very unlucky with that volley. And the players trust him now as well, don't they? You can see it. The amount of times we've played matches where, you know, we'd work it out to the left-hand side, he'd make an overlapping run and the players would almost use him and come back inside again, almost knowing that, well, if we give it to him, he's just going to give it me back because he's not going to try and take the full back on. He's not going to try and get to the byline and put a cross in. Or even if he does put a cross in, it's going to be garbage. And you know, players, we're not stupid. At the end of the day, if they don't trust someone, you'll openly see it. And massive credit to Dyche as well, like I said, but also to Miko as well for really forcing his way back into the side. And then now arguably being one of the first names on the team sheet.
100%. And, you know, we discussed them at length last week in terms of his turnaround in form in recent weeks. You know, he had a difficult start to his Everton career. I said this in midweek. For a piece of the road, and you know, very much a case of he'd been signed by Benitez. He then got sacked. Lampard comes in. He's there for so long. Lampard goes. He's had obviously the war in Ukraine has been going on. Obviously, his dad was also fighting in that. He's had injuries as well, and he's just now probably starting to settle into the Premier League. 24 years of age. He was saying this last week. He's still a young player. And you know, he's only going to get better, and I think we're seeing that consistency now. We know defensively he was always being better than going forward. I think when I was starting to see the two come together a little bit, but as Sean Dyche said last week, first and foremost, he's a fullback and he needs to defend them. And you know, again yesterday he put in some great tackles. You know, take his goal out of the equation defensively. You know, he was good. And it's what you want to see. And it was a great start, you know, and we thought, okay, we always say, you know, don't score too early, Everton. You know, every single time over the years that happens, you know, we're just going to sit back and soak it up. But the game being what it was very, a very, very frantic start. And we found ourselves, obviously, a few minutes later, we're back to 1-1. And what's your take on that penalty, Pete, in terms of, we saw one later on, where Eze gets booked for diving, you know, pretty soon after the first penalty. Looking at the penalty that was given, obviously Branthwaite dangles a bit of a leg up, but then looks to pull his leg away. Do you think it was a penalty? Do you think that it was justified? It went to VAR. Don't forget, they took a little bit of time checking that. What's your take on that?
I think it was a soft pen. I think it was definitely soft because I think what you're saying is spot on. When you look at it both in real time and slow-mo, the contact looks minimal. And I think it's one of those where Eze's just felt the leg and has just allowed himself to topple over. I thought it was a bit tongue-in-cheek kind of after the game. You know, a lot of pundits and Roy Hodgson saying, oh, you know, Eze's not the type of player to dive and throw himself on the floor. And look, I'm not going after Eze and saying he is, but how many times did you hear people say that about Drogba? You know, how many times have you heard people say it about Salah? It's just what players do. It's what attacking tricky players do. It's part of the game now, and we have to accept it. But yeah, it was a very, very soft penalty. And it's one of those where if it's at the other end of the pitch, I wouldn't be confident that Everton would get a decision like that. But I think you just have to accept it now as part of football. And you know, if a player feels any kind of contact in the box, they're going to throw themselves on the floor or just, you know, allow their legs to go. And I think that's probably what's happened on the second one, really, that either absolutely minimal contact's been made, certainly not enough for SA to go down, or, you know, the movement of Branthwaite is, you know, in a split second in SA's mind, made him think, okay, you know, I might get another one here, I'm going to go down again. Because I think Roy Hodgson said, why would he go down in a situation like that? But if you look, as he cut in, great bit of skill, he's kind of coming away from goal. His back's almost to goal at the point he goes down, and he's surrounded by about four defenders. So there was no way from that position he was ever going to get a shot off. Certainly not a shot that would trouble Jordan Pickford. And there wasn't a pass on for him either. So that's why he's gone down. And it probably was a dive. But I think the tricky thing for the referee is there's probably not a lot between the first decision and the second. And I think it's one of those where, you know, would he get a yellow card if he hadn't have got the penalty in the first place? So, you know, two slightly funny decisions, but I think actually probably on balance that the refs got them both right there, but by the letter of the law. It was a soft pen, but by letter of the law, it was a pen. And I do think he was right to book him for the second one.
I think that's bang on that, Pete, the assessment there. I think, by the way, Eze was at times brilliant yesterday. You know, you credit where it's due. Lovely footballer, completely transforms Palace. You know, him and Elise fit for them, and they're suddenly a much better side. Take them two out of that team, and they haven't had them for spells this season. And they're a very ordinary side, Palace, aren't they? I think Eze's a very, very good footballer. He'd be perfect for us in a 10 there behind the Calvert-Lewin. Do you know what I mean? Someone that gets on it in the pockets, turns with the ball, runs at you, can spot a pass, got a goal in him. You know, kudos to Palace for tying him down on a contract as well. But at times, he was the best player on the pitch for me yesterday. And that first one, you're right, Pete, he was kind of running into traffic, wasn't he, as well? Do you know what I mean? So was he really going to get a shot off? And it's a bit of naivety from Branthwaite in a way. He kind of tried to dangle his leg and sort of try to pull it away, you know, but he'll learn from that. Because overall, like Jake was saying before, you know, he's been outstanding this season along with Tarkowski. But and then the second one, yeah, you're right. He went down far too easy. Great bit of skill to get past O'Neill. Little body shimmy, didn't he, on the touchlines, left him for dead. And then, he was cutting onto his left foot with his back to goal, Pete. Like you said, he was barely going to get any purchase on any shot, even if he was going to shoot from there. So, fair play to the ref as well, because he's a new ref, isn't he? I think that was his fifth Premier League game. And, you know, Palace isn't an easy game away from home to ref. He was strong there. Plenty of other refs would have easily pointed to the spot there, by the way. So credit to the ref there for having the balls to sort of go, no, you've dived there, son, or you've gone down far too easily, and then booking him. I thought the ref overall, on the whole, had a good game as well, by the way.
Yeah, I think up to a point in the first half, I think he refereed the game very well, and I had no complaints. But as we know, every single week now, it's like ref watch for every set of fans because of the pressure that they brought upon themselves. And, I mean, it takes me on then, Jake, too. Obviously, Eze's being booked for that dive, and whether it's right or wrong, he's being booked. We then see quite soon after this is where, now I didn't have an issue with this, but it's certainly a talking point. He brings Onana down quite, you know, you could argue a fairly cynical foul. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think that then should have been the second yellow card for Eze? Because obviously Onana's trying to break free. Obviously, it was an obvious foul. Do you think then, you know, on a yellow card, he should have gone at that particular point?
It's a tough one. I think because he's been given the yellow for diving and it did take a little bit of time for VAR to clear that one up, I think that the ref sort of in his head thought, was it a contentious one, was it not? I mean, obviously it turned out not to be. I think once he had a look at it, he'd have been happy with the decision. But I think at the time, he might have had a little bit of a question mark. So then to give a yellow card straight away, I think it would have been a massive call, and like you say, for a ref in his very infancy of being a ref, I think would have been a massive call. For me, there was one a little bit later on, which I don't think was even given a foul. I think on James Garner on the edge of the box, where I think he was about to pull the trigger, and he's nudged him in the back. You know, it's a it's a professional foul. It would have been, you know, Garner would have got the shot away. For me, that was more of a yellow card than the Onana one. Whether that would have been an accumulation, whether he's had another word of him there. I think on another day he might have got a second yellow for one of those two. If the ref wanted to get involved a bit more than the ref did yesterday, but I think he was probably just all right to stay on the pitch.
I think, and that first one with Onana, I said this, didn't I, during the game yesterday? I think that we do look every single time, say especially when someone's on a booking and he fouls somebody again, automatically fans will think he's on a yellow card, must be a second booking. Not every foul is a bookable offence. So the one on Onana for me, I was like, well, okay, you know, we can't be looking for bookings for every little foul. But that James Garner one was the one for me where, as I say, the referee the game pretty well, and it was that particular situation where that was quite blatant for me. That was quite obvious, and it was quite clearly a foul. You're on a booking as well, and that was the one where the referee for me got it wrongly. And I think that this is, don't get me wrong, we need new referees coming through. We had one at Goodison Park last weekend, who I don't think was particularly great, but. You know, you've got to give referees the benefit of the doubt when they're coming into the Premier League, first games, first season. It takes time to get up to speed, and for me, they can't be any worse than what the current crop of referees are in terms of their level of performance. But the fella yesterday, Lee, with that one where Garner is, you know, we edge of the box, he's running through, certainly gets a little shove, little clip. That one is a second yellow card, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Jake's right. I think he knew what he was doing. He knows he's the wrong side, and the ball's, you know, he's reacted slower than Garner. The ball's dropped in an inviting area for a shot, and he's done that split second thing where he sort of panicked, doesn't he? And you know, nudged him, as you said, and which has obviously nudged Garner off balance to stop him getting a shot off. And I think the ref knows if he gives that, he's probably then going to have to book him. And he obviously lets play go on. And I thought that's one of the few decisions in the first half that he actually got wrong. On the whole, he refereed the game really well. Going back to what you're saying, well, I mean, you know, ever since the Liverpool cock-up or the debacle there with regards to, you know, check complete, they've now reverted back to literally taking forever and a day to review every decision again now, aren't they? Rather than, trying to be quick. And then come to a wrong decision like they did in the Liverpool game. But that's obviously a communication issue more than anything else. I think it's getting to the point now where there's so many voices around the game, it's getting talked about nearly every match, that for me, they should just scrap it all together. Go, you know, stick with the goal line technology, everything else. Yeah, that works fine. But using VAR to almost check nearly every decision now, it's just ruining the game. It's ruining the game, you know, particularly for the fans at the ground more than anyone else, really, because you don't get to see anything. You don't know what they're reviewing half the time. You know, the players, you can see it's driving them nuts as well. You know, you celebrate a goal and then you kind of like pause, they check it for 3 or 4 minutes and you go and celebrate again. It's just not conducive to the pace of the Premier League. Other sports that are a bit more start-stop, yeah, then fair enough, you know. It probably does. The technology maybe will lend itself to it, but certainly not for football, because it's taken away from the spectacle of it now. And until they can get it absolutely nailed, and why they haven't brought that technology and they're using the Champions League for the offsides as well is just baffling. So for me, will they go back now and say, look, forget it? Or probably very unlikely, because it'd have to be across the board, wouldn't it? But I'd rather us just go back to human error, to be honest. And you will get contentious decisions, of course you will, but at least you know it's not stopping the game for, you know, 10 minutes while they review if you're, you know, half a toenail offside or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there was a lot of lengthy stopping yesterday, wasn't it, for the goals? You know, we look at obviously their penalty, that their equaliser. We look at our second goal. We look at their second goal. They all had lengthy stoppages for VAR checks, and it does take away. I mean, when we scored the second goal, your first thought is, well, that's an go to VAR, just because of where Decore was and how open it was. And I think we need to, you know, it takes so much away from the sport as a spectacle, doesn't it? And, you know, with the League Cup, and we haven't seen it used, have we, in the League Cup, and how refreshing it is when you don't see it get used, and you can, you know, you're safe in celebrating a goal because you're looking at the assistant referee, if the flag's not up, you know, it's going to be all right. So, they've got to get it right. But let's not spend, you know, another podcast discussing refereeing decisions in VAR, because Everton have come away with a win. And, you know, after going back to 1-1, being under a little bit of pressure, we start the second half, Pete, on the same front foot, don't we? We started the first, and inside a few minutes of the second half starting, we're ahead again. And we've said it already, Mikhailenko, it was almost reminiscent of that Leicester goal, wasn't it, last season, where he catches a volley absolutely perfectly, hits the post. Man on the spot again, Mr. Decore, who since Sean Dyche has brought him back in for that Arsenal game last season, after obviously the fallout with Frank Lampard. He's probably been Sean Dyche's most important player since he arrived at the club.
Definitely, yeah. I think he's been our most important player. He's old Mr. Reliable now. And, you know, when I think we did a bit of comparison in a recent podcast, didn't we, between him and some of the other top midfielders in Europe in terms of stats. But he's up there, isn't he? He's up there for goals and assists, and he just scores such important goals for us. And his strength is definitely just being that kind of instinctive, reactive player, you know, right place, right time. And he tends to score difficult goals that he doesn't have a great deal of time to think about. I was going to say the same thing about the Mikhailenko volley and the Leicester goal. Again, the lad can strike a ball, can't he? There's some technique on that. It would have been a right goal if it would have went in. But yeah, I mean, I know we've not spoke about it yet, but the third goal as well, you know, Decore was at the heart of that. And I said recently, I do think really Sean Dyche has built this team around him as much as Calvert-Lewin. I know we've spoken so much about how we miss Calvert-Lewin and how we need that kind of centre forward and how important it is to have Beto. But, you know, for me, Decore is at the heart of our team. And I think when we initially signed him, you know, this is the version of Decore that Evertonians really wanted to see, that kind of box-to-box player. You know, he's absolutely tireless, isn't he, over 90 minutes. You know, the fitness of the man. And he's just so difficult to play against, isn't he? You know, would you want Abdoulaye Decore pressing you if you're a centre-half? And, you know, when he gets the ball, he's positive. You know, he always goes forward, always makes something happen. And I don't know, he's a player you have confidence in. He's a player you have belief in that he can change the game, and he can change the game at any point. So I'm thrilled for him. I'm thrilled for Everton. And, you know, he absolutely deserves his contract.
100%. And, you know, great news that he signed that extension. Great news that he said he's not going to go to the Africa Cup of Nations as well, which means he's going to be around for the fixtures in January and February, which is important for us given the size of our squad and the probably apparent lack of business we're probably going to be doing or not doing in the January transfer window. But he's a real pest at times, Jake, isn't he, Decore? And we discussed them ourselves at length a couple of weeks ago, where he's quite erratic with the ball at his feet, and sometimes he overcomplicates things, and sometimes he rushes things and what have you. But now he's a player that you know, when he's fit, there's no one that can come in and do what he does, is there?
No, I don't think there is, and I think it's that magic word I think that we can use for quite a few of our players now, and that's that confidence. I think he knows his role now. He's got that role of not necessarily having to be too defensive. You know, like I say, you get that box to box, up and down. And I think the one for me was the pass for the third goal to Garner. I don't think he would have played that pass 2 years ago or last year. I think he would have probably looked to get it out wide and be a bit safe, maybe pass it sideways. But that was a clinical pass. It was at the time I thought it was a fairly simple one, but when you look at it back, you know, he's had to really thread that one through. And I think that's one thing that he's definitely added to his game. is that clinical pass. I think we've said for years that number 10 role is an area where, you know, we need that, especially with Calvert-Lewin up there, to have somebody that can pick a pass and find an angle is massive for us, and for him to be now hopefully adding that to his game. You know, I think he's just going to go from strength to strength, and like I said, I think it's just that confidence that I think Sean Dyche has given. Like I said, I think Lee said, you know, you've got to give him that credit. You know, I think he's turned it round under difficult circumstances to now have a team where we were saying, you know, you could see the confidence sort of oozing through the team yesterday. I think massive credit has to go to Sean Dyche.
Yeah, of course, and he's got to be the man who's basically given the applause for turning the core of his career around at Everton, given the fact he was frozen out under Frank Lampard. And you look at how important, as I say, he has been since Sean Dyche has come in, and you know, he is now, he's undroppable, if that is you know, if we can use that word. And it's great to see him, you know, yet again find the back of the net. He's so important to us. But Lee, in typical Everton style and fashion, you know, we rode our luck anyway, and at that particular point, at 2-1, you know, the stats then come up, don't they, a little bit later on in that second half. And the second half, possession stats went to 80%, 20% in Palace's favour. And Everton just sat in, and we were riding our luck, and we were inviting things on at times, weren't we? And this is why I say that, you know, the game yesterday was a combination of a lot of things of what we've maybe seen under Sean Dyche in terms of, yeah, we were digging in at certain points. At times we were open and expansive and taking the play to Crystal Palace. But we sort of went into ourselves, didn't we, and invited them on. And you see the mistake that is made. But, you know, we don't know whether it was Tarkowski's fault. Did he get a shout? Was he just trying to be cute and letting the ball go and thinking Pickford would be there? We, you know, we don't know. But that second goal was a poor goal to concede, but probably a goal that was of our own making as well.
Yeah, and not really in tune with the way Tarkowski has been playing this season, and indeed in that match, by the way, he was winning so many first balls. Anything that was put in the box on set pieces, open play, he normally gets his head on it first. First half, he had, you know, did a little dink to the back post, didn't he? He's got a standing jump there with Edouard closing down on him. He went a brilliant header to knock it out for a corner, for example. But this is the bit where I think I text you boys in the group. This is the bit I take umbrage a little bit with Dyche. And I think this, for me, is the next phase where Everton need to improve. Is we've done this against a few teams this season. And, you know, more notably last week against Brighton and then obviously this week. Is, you know, that classic 80-20% where we just completely drop off. We sit in very deep and teams just camp in our half then. And then we're essentially, we've got no real get out. I've got no problem as sitting in a shape and being hard to beat and then saying to the opposition, say, go on, then play through us, or if you put it in, we'll head it out. But then when we do get it, we've got to counter with some sort of purpose or some quality. And that's the bit I took a bit of umbrage with yesterday, in the fact that we did drop in as soon as Mikulenko scored. As soon as Decore scored to go 2-1 up. And then we just completely, as if to say, right, we're going to sit like this now for 40 minutes or 40 minutes plus to try and see this game out. And as what happened with Brighton the other week, you know, you're liable to a deflection, you're liable to a bit of fortune. And to be honest, I've really felt sorry for Calvert-Lewin in that period as well. In fact, for most of the game, because you can see by his body language, he's up against two big centre-halves who know the Premier League really well. That Gahey's a good centre-half, let's be fair. He's an athlete, he's a good player. Anderson's savvy. You know what I mean? He's been around the block, he knows the game. He was getting little change out of them, Calvert-Lewin, because they do like the physical contact, both those two centre-halves. And we were just penned in. And if you look at that goal, their second goal, yes, it was ultimately a mistake from Tarkowski, but it starts when Decore actually wins the ball back on the edge of our box. And then he just lumps it into the channel. Doesn't even look really, just to say that, I'm going to lump it there. Dom, you run after it. Obviously, it's a nothing ball. And then, you know, they tidy it up quite easily and then mount another attack again. And I just think, like I was saying before, that's the next phase I think we need to work on. And when I say that, I mean, like, if we are going to drop off in that position, I want us to be working on patterns of play. So if we do win it back, where are we going to go? Do you know what I mean? Where, you know, rather than just hit it into the channel, do we kind of say, look, Dom, every time we get it, we're going to kind of put it in this area. We're going to put it to your feet. Or, you know, just say to one of the wingers, look, you drop into this place, or we'll try and play out, or whatever. Just have some form of pattern of play rather than just, you know, sitting in a shape and then lumping it forward. And to be honest, once it got to 2-2, and by the way, I think Tarkowski left that, judging by Pickford's body language, by the way, I think Tarkowski did just leave it. You know, he wasn't berating Pickford by any means. Wanted to say, why did you shout? So it looks like he just left it, not knowing fully where Edouard was. And then you're arguably going to say there, then Palace, who were the better side, like Pete was saying before at this point, they've got all the momentum then. You know, suddenly, it's under the lights. It's one of the hardest grounds to go to when the noise is up. They're kicking their end, and you're thinking, they've got all the momentum here. You know, if anything, it's 3-2 Palace. And credit to the lads. And this is where I think Dyche deserves a little bit of credit as well. Is since he's come in and the mess he inherited, one of the things he did inherit was a real soft underbelly of a side, wasn't it? Where if you did get in under pressure, particularly away from home, you know, we just capitulate. A bit like what United are right now, to be honest. You know, it's almost like a very soft side. And that's a real resilience there. That's been built up over time. The players just gathered themselves together, didn't panic. The crowd is up. And then, you know, we got a foot back on the ball again and started playing a bit of football. And that ultimately led to a brilliant third goal. You know, arguably the best goal of the game, really. And the fact that lovely bit of, you know, ball gets recycled. We're higher up the pitch. Ball gets recycled back to Tarkowski. That's a lovely ball, by the way, into Garner. And the brilliant thing with Garner there, he could have easily, you know, just wall passed it back to him, couldn't he? Easily. But he didn't. He turned on it. And then it's all of a sudden he's facing their goal. And then obviously he follows his pass. And like Jake was saying before, that's a great pick out that by Decore and the pressure as well. On his weak foot as well, by the way. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, James Rodriguez would have been happy with that one. And fair play to Garner, because, you know, it's probably not the player you want, judging by his finishing ability on the end of it. But that first touch almost makes it, doesn't it? Because it knocks it into the space. And he just gets there just in time, didn't he? To slide in and hook it in with his left foot. And massive credit there. Massive credit, because let's be honest, and Pete framed it brilliantly before, like, you know, we probably didn't deserve to win the game. A draw maybe would have been a fairish result. We didn't deserve to win it. But to go there and a really difficult place and get a winning goal there with 5-6 minutes to go is huge testament to this side.
Like you say, of all the players that you won that position, you want to be Garner Gay. The last time he hit the target was actually in 2017 in a training session. So for him to actually do that and score a goal was incredible. But lovely finish, you know, lovely bit of football. Obviously, he's come on a hard time, Amadou Onana. He seems to aggravate his calf again in that first half. So Garner comes on and, you know, he said to the minds, you know, I'm ready. You know, when you need me, that's his place, but I'm ready. And he comes on and he does the business. And great to see him grab a goal, Pete, wasn't it? You know, we talk about getting goals throughout this side. And we look at the players you scored now this season. And there's goals everywhere, you know, from sort of, you know, Tarkowski to Mikhailenko, Ashley Young, obviously Garner Gay, James Garner, Calvert-Lewin, Beto, Danjuma, Decore. They're coming from all over the place, Harrison. So it was great for Garner to get his first goal since coming back to the club from PSG.
Definitely, and like Lee says, it's the first touch that makes it. It was such a good first touch. Decore's pinged that ball in. It's a great pass, but it's coming at pace, and it's that first cushioned touch on his right foot that just sets him up. And it's absolutely the right shot to go the other way across the keeper. I thought he had a great game, and it's credit to him really, because I guess effectively he's kind of been dropped, hasn't he, in favour of James Garner, with James Garner's form and James Garner's development. So, you know, he could sulk, he could drop off his game, but whenever he's come in, for me, he's just performed at that consistent Garner Gay level. You kind of know what you're getting, and I know we've reflected that now he's an older player and expectations need to shift a little bit. But look, potentially this could be the perfect role for him at this point in his career. You know, James Garner understudy to him. Garner Gabe maybe not having as much pressure on him in terms of, you know, minutes and legs. And look, it's not bad, is it, having a player of his experience and caliber coming off the bench to maybe settle and control the game a little bit. And absolutely fantastic that he was the one to kind of come up with the winning goal, because like you say, when he came in at half time, I thought he was exceptional. I thought he was absolutely brilliant coming into that midfield in a really difficult game. You know, like Lee was saying there, Palace were playing some really excellent football. They were probably the better team, let's say, in footballing terms. So he's come on to a really fast paced game against, you know, an aggressive midfield, and he's, you know, he's had a really top performance there for me.
Yeah, and something that we've become accustomed to since he's come back, really. You know, at times he can be a little bit lax on the ball, can't he? Sometimes he plays that blind pass and without looking and gets us into trouble. But I think Garner Gay is a consistently good performer and an ideal player to come off the bench when you need him to, as he proved yesterday. But I think the scenes, you know, when he scored his goal, and you look at the celebrations, obviously, with the players on the pitch, the players on the bench as well. And Onana, he's been taken off. He got booked for over-celebrating, by the way, for that particular goal, because he's come charging down the sideline. But the actual celebrations throughout the team, I think, are the evidence of this almost newfound team spirit. Now, we look at, you know, where we are now. You know, the last nine games in all competitions, we won six. Which is a great return, you know, for a side who couldn't win a raffle, you know, over the last 2 years. It's an incredible turnaround in terms of our form. You know, we look at the games that we've won in recent times. Obviously, the Palace game, West Ham, Brentford all away. Obviously, we beat Bournemouth at home. We've gone to Villa away in the League Cup and beat them and looked good in doing so. And I think that, you know, the question really, Jake, is where is this team spirit coming from now, do you think? Because, you know, we know how hard it's been the last couple of seasons. And a lot of these players were part of that, especially last season. But a lot of these players have been there in and around the club for those 2 years. What do you put that down to? Because it's evident, it's clear. There's an ever-say-die attitude, there's a resilience in that side now. What do you think the reason for that is?
I think first and foremost, it's not an easy thing to do. I think over my career so far, I've been involved in a couple of teams that have had to turn around some really bad performances. One that sticks out would probably be one of our Notts 4 day sides. We didn't win a game for like 1,000 days or something like that. It was a joke. Like, we couldn't even get like a little victory here and there. But one thing for me is there would be a hell of a lot of work going behind the scenes. I think there would be, you almost have to put yourself in this bubble. I think especially football, where the noise is so much, you sort of have to sort of keep everything in-house. You have to do the work in-house, try and keep all the outside noise out. And just, I think trust your processes. I think that's one thing that I think Dyche will have done really well since he come in. You know, there's been a hell of a lot of noise, like even at the start of this season, you know, wanting him out. I think it's about just really focusing on the processes of what you do and trusting that the work you're putting in is going to pay out. Obviously, you know, that you have to see elements of that. And I think we did do that at the start of the season. There's a hell of a lot of crap gets talked about in a cricket dressing room, and a lot of it is about football. And I was getting so much stick at the start of the season, saying, "Are you going to go down this season?" And I was like, "If you've watched the games, what we're playing decent football, just not putting the ball in the net." You know, I think that came through on our XGs at times, and you know, I was like, "As long as they keep trusting that what they're doing is going to turn around and." You know, we're going to get Calvert-Lewin back. We're going to get, you know, Jack Harrison back. We're going to get Dwight McNeil back. We're going to get these players back that are going to score goals, create goals. I think that's probably the big thing for me is that they've sort of shut out all the noise at the start of the season and trusted what they were doing is the right thing. And then eventually it has come good. And now you're seeing that come to fruition and definitely seeing the confidence now and the fact that we're seeing those performances on the field give us more confidence and everything just lifts and the confidence of not just the players now, but the fans and you know, even the pundits that you can't put a smile on their face and saying, actually, you know what? Everton are playing some good football now, and I think that's basically where we're at now. We're at a point where we've trusted what he's doing. We can see the evidence of what he's been doing, and now everything's just everyone's confident and happy.
I think it's a powerful combination. We've said this before. When you get the fans on side, and then all of a sudden the players start winning a few games, and then they trust the process. And like you were saying, Jay, the fans then trust the process. You know, it can elevate a team like way quicker. I mean, I look at Everton now, hopefully parallels maybe, although it's very, very early doors, by the way, of when Emre came in at Villa. You know, they were really floundering. Some decent talent in the squad, but Gerrard, you know, really struggled to get a tune out of them. Emre comes in, has a real profound impact, obviously clearly a top coach. Then all of a sudden, you know, the team wins a few, the fans get on board, and then all of a sudden they have a final push for Europe. There's nothing to say if we keep certain players fit that we can't push the upper ends of the table. Especially like you were saying before, we're unlucky not to be arguably on probably another six more points as well, really, if not more. We've been unfortunate, certainly in those early games this season. Hopefully the dreaded R word is out of the conversation now. You can never rule it out, but there seems a real team there now. You know, we've always known there's been some quality in there, but there's a resilience, a real resilience, which Dyche and his team have really built up over time. And that's really good to see. And I want to give huge credit as well yesterday, because it won't get mentioned by many, but I thought Beto did brilliantly when he came on yesterday. You know, the lad hasn't had much of a look in. We've ultimately signed him as, hopefully a main centre forward. And let's be honest, he would have played every game pretty much last season. But can you imagine it at 2-2 there, by the way? Can you imagine bringing on Mope in that scenario where we're penned in, we can't get out, Calvert-Lewin's getting no change out of the centre halves, and we bring Mope on? Well, it would have just carried on being the same, and we'd have been defending like the Alamo. But credit where Beto comes on. He does a lot of unseen stuff when he comes on. You know, I think in the first few minutes he comes on, he has that little tussle with Gay in the corner, and like, almost like, you know, they both get, you know, flying to the ground. But that's almost him putting a marker down, wasn't it? To say, look, you're not going to push me around, son. And instantly he gave us that way of getting out, because he got on the ball, he roughed up a few of their players. Yes, we know he's a little bit ungangly and ungainly and things like that, but ultimately He really helped us have a platform to build after that when it went to 2-2. He was closing down. He was making good runs. He was unlucky not to get a goal. We need to make it four as well. Credit, you know, I'd have loved him to have got a goal there. But, you know, I think he should get some credit there for what he did when he comes on. Because, like I said before, this time last year, we'd have brought Mope on there if Calvert-Lewin was fit. And I don't think we'd have gone on to win that game. So, you know, Dom, I did feel for him yesterday, the service he got in the main was poor. You know, we were effectively just trying to hit him from every angle. And like I said, their two centre-halves, you know, generally did a number on him, really. But Beto made a real difference. And I don't know what you think, Mike, but I thought he really, really deserved some credit for his little cameo yesterday when he comes on.
Yeah, of course. I mean, another example of a player who's been brought in and at the moment knows his position in the squad. And like Garner Gay in recent weeks, you know, when you need me, I'll be ready. I mean, nobody's all about, you know, we said it for the last few weeks, probably just needs a goal in the league now just to settle him down and such. But he came on, he's a pain, he was physical, he was putting himself about. And, you know, like you say, unlucky not to get a goal himself. He's created the space there pretty well. And he's just sort of slashed at the ball, really, hasn't he? And he's put it quite a few yards wide. But it would have been a fitting end really to the game to win by two, it would have been a slight robbery, because we said earlier on we probably didn't deserve to win the game on balance. But how many times in recent years have we been in a situation where we have deserved something from the game and got nothing at all? How many times have we been pegged back and then lost the game? Because we were all thinking it. There's only going to go one way. And that's where this resilience comes in. That's where, you know, the work that Sean Dyche and his team have done. The players obviously are buying into it. Never say die. Don't give up. Keep going. And, you know, the second goal was the catalyst for us to then go, well, hang on, we're not just going to sit there now and just soak things up again. Let's have a go. Let's try and get the winner ourselves. And we did it. And, you know, Beto was a big part of that. And the players who were coming off the bench at the moment are just as important as those who were starting games. We know Sean Dyche is very trusting of his starting 11. We know he's not, you know, great at using the bench, so to speak, and he's got his reasons for that. But players have got to come in and take the chance and do the job. And it's just nice to see them looking so together after what we've been through. And I think, I don't know about you, Pete, but I think that the last couple of years have maybe been a little bit of a reason behind that as well. I think maybe, given what's going on off the pitch at the moment in terms of, you know, this independent commission, the result is due behind at any time now, all those kind of things combined, the financial issues, I think almost that may have brought this attitude of it's us against them.
Maybe, but I mean, to think about it another way, for me, it's all the more impressive that we've been able to achieve what we have, particularly over the past 5 or 6 games in the face of what's going on off the pitch. Because I don't know what you lads think, but for me, every time, you know, I look at a newspaper, online article, sports media, it is like the world cannot wait for Everton to fail. It's like the world cannot wait for us to get a points deduction. The world can't wait for us to get into, to financial trouble. The amount of articles after 2 games, are Everton circling the relegation drain? So it's so great going into this international break with that buffer, that gap between us and the bottom three, and not to be associated with those conversations at the moment. But I really do think it's absolutely massive credit to, you know, the manager, the staff, all of the players that in the face of that, that they've started to climb out of it, because, you know, not just the pressure and the challenge of breaking away from the cycle of the past 2 years or so, but I think the amount of pressure from outside the club, you know, the players must feel that. And I think it's easy to forget that and lose sight of it. It does feel like everything's against us. And maybe, as you say, Mike, that the players and the staff have managed to kind of channel that and take it in the right direction to take us forward and to step up. But, you know, if we're looking back at the end of the season and we've survived, or, you know, or even better, we're in a kind of a mid-table or above position, and, you know, maybe we've had a little bit of success somewhere, I think it will be an absolutely unbelievable season. And I really do think even that in itself would be a massive, massive achievement when you look at the legacy of the past 2 years and everything the club's been through. So I don't think it can be understated or underestimated enough, really. I think you're absolutely spot on. It's massive, massive credit to this group of players. And hopefully what we're seeing now is the building of something.
Fingers crossed it is, and it's good to end this, you know, this period of the season now, another boring international break. We can all fall asleep for 2 weeks now until the Premier League returns. And we've ended it on a high. You know, how many times have we called for an international break just to break up the poor performances that we've been seeing in recent times? But it's great to end it on a positive. 4 wins so far in the league this season. We didn't get our 4th win last season until Sean Dyche's first game in February. So that's a massive, massive change. You know, I think after 12 games last season, we were on 10 points. So this was around the time now where the wheels really started to fall off under Frank Lampard. And hopefully, you know, given what we've seen in the last 9 games, where we say we won 6 of them, this is now the time for Everton to really kick on. And we're looking up, not down, which is the really important thing. No matter what comes our way, what they throw at us, you know, I think now it is important to look up, and we're closer to Europe than we are to the relegation zone. So that's a real positive as well. But it's just nice to feel a little bit more upbeat about Everton, and it's all credit to the players and the manager and the backroom staff for obviously now having a plan, the players buying into it and saving up performances, which is bringing about wins and getting those points. But that's us for today and this week. Jake, absolute pleasure to have you on again. We will organise a game of golf. Well, Lee will organise a game of golf, and me and Pete will travel in tow and carry the clubs around when you do move to Somerset.
Yeah, I look forward to it, lads. Really enjoyed it. Nice to be on there and talk positively.
Oh, certainly makes a change, that's for sure. But that's us for today, us for this week. We will be back in the week of the United game, not next weekend. Obviously, internationals will be going on. Let's see what players come back. Let's see who's fit. More importantly, we'll do a little preview of the United game, which is a couple of weeks today, our full kickoff at Goodison Park. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues. Three Opinions. One Everton Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.